This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Tennyson, Yeats, Pound, Frost, Wallace Stevens, T.S. Eliot, Dylan Thomas, and Charles Bukowski are some of the poets included in a new CD box set called Poetry on Record. It features 98 poets reading their own work on recordings made between 1888 and 2006. We asked one of our favorite living poets, Billy Collins, to choose some of his favorite selections from the box and talk with us about the poems. Collins served as the U.S. Poet Laureate from 2001 to 2003 and is the current New York State Poet Laureate. His latest collection of poems is called The Trouble with Poetry. Billy Collins, welcome back to Fresh Air. Now, we asked you to choose some poems to play from this new poetry box set, and I'm glad that you decided to start with William Butler Yeats reading his poem The Lake Isle of Innisfree, because he starts with a really interesting introduction in which he talks, among other things, about his style of reading poetry. What made his style of reading so unique?
It's very, his introduction, which we'll hear, I imagine, is very revealing because he insists that he spent a lot of time writing to a certain rhythm and probably just spent a lot of time writing the poem, period, and that he's not going to sacrifice any of that rhythm in the reading. And it's interesting to see that he's 72 years old when he reads this poem out loud, and he wrote it when he was 23. So there's almost 50 years intervened between the composition and recording of the poem. And he reads in a style of sort of a high chant. It's like the bardic singing. It's not writing anymore. It's almost like a Gregorian type of chanting.
Did he always read that way, do you know?
Well, I've heard other poems by him, and he always reads in this very held vowel, chanting Celtic style, and that really not just began modern recordings of poetry, but sort of set the bar and the tone for other poets. The poems by Pound, by Ezra Pound, that are on these CDs, it actually sounds like Pound is at a party doing an impression of Yeats. Many of them followed that kind of high declamatory style.
The poem we're going to hear Yeats read is The Lake Isle of Innisfree. What do you like about this poem?
Oh, well, it's a perfectly organized poem. It's a desire for this kind of magic island where he can retreat to and live alone in the Be Loud Glade. And the first stanza talks about the practical things he needs, like bean rows, and he's going to have a garden, and he's going to build a cabin. And then later stanzas talk about the spiritual, the less tangible resources that he'll have on this island. And it has just a beautiful ending. It's like a perfectly formed poem.
Okay, well, here's Yeats reading The Lake Isle of Innisfree in 1937, 2 years before his death.
I'm going to read my poems with great emphasis upon their rhythm. And that may seem strange if you are not used to it. I will not read them as if they were prose. I am going to begin with a poem of mine called The Lake Isle of Innisfree. Because if you know anything about me, you will expect me to begin with it. It is the only poem of mine which is very widely known. When I was a young lad in the town of Sligo, I read Porro's essays and wanted to live in a hut on an island in Lough Gill called Innisfree, which means Heather Island. I wrote the poem in London when I was about 23. One day in the Strand, I heard a little tinkle of water and saw on a shop window a little jet of water balancing a ball on the top. It was an advertisement, I think, of cooling drinks, but it set me thinking of Sligo and Lake Water. I will arise and go now and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honey bee, and live alone in the bee loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. Their midnight's all a glimmer and noon a purple glow, and evening full of linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavements gray, I hear it in the deep harp's core.
Okay, that was William Butler Yeats reading and introducing his poem, The Lake Isle of Innisfree. He reads, it's like an incantation. It's almost eerie sounding.
It's just a little scary. I mean, especially mm-hmm. the introduction, you feel like, you know, the audience might be cowering in his refusal to read it any other way.
No, exactly.
And when he's reading, even when he's reading the poem, he sounds like he's saying, if you don't come in here, I'm going to tan your hide. You know, it sounds like a kind of threatening voice. But he's, you know, but he's rolling his R's and he holds every consonant and vowel count, you know, in that kind of declamatory style that Dylan Thomas does it. Ginsberg does it to a certain degree. It is this sort of emphasis on every unit in the poem gets some stress. Sounds like he really means what he's saying.
Yeah, I'm glad you said all this because listening to him, I felt like, if he knew that I hadn't read that much of him, he'd be really angry with me. I feel like not a good student listening to him.
He does sound like a stern schoolmaster, and it's interesting that he's lived long enough to know that that's his signature poem.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
If you know any of his poems, you're gonna know that one. It's also interesting that in the introduction, it tells us that high sounding, very moving poetry can have very low origins. I mean, he heard an advertisement for a fizzy drink, I think. And that got him thinking about water, and that got him thinking about the Lake Isle. It would be like Robert Frost saying that he wrote Stopping by Woods on a snowy evening after seeing a Pepsi commercial. You know, it's just, you just don't know where the source of some of these poems are.
Just joining us, my guest is Billy Collins. He's the former U.S. Poet Laureate, the current New York State Poet Laureate, and we've asked him to choose some poems from a new CD box set called Poetry on Record, 98 Poets Read Their Work. And the next poet that we're going to hear from is William Carlos Williams. And Billy, I think what you have to say about this poem is going to take a lot longer than the poem itself. it's a really short poem.
don't blink. It'll be over in a second.
So tell us about this poem and its importance.
Well, it's thought of as a kind of the poem that is the best example of American imagism, where the poet simply presents an image of an object or a collage of objects. It's almost like handing you a snapshot and not saying anything about it. And just giving you the picture. And that's why it's a little bewildering, because it is so short and there's no editorializing or there's no person in it, really.
Well, let's hear it. This is William Carlos Williams reading The Red Wheelbarrow.
The Red Wheelbarrow. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens.
That's it. That's the poem. I think we should hear it one more time.
Okay.
The Red Wheelbarrow. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens.
Billy, do you think that that's typical in any way of William's poems?
Some of them. Some of them are longer and a little more, lyrical, but he does have a set of these strictly photographic poems. One thing that that poem brings up, and it's over so quickly, is that to listen to a poem, especially read by the poet, involves gaining something and losing something. I mean, you gain the kind of personality and the intimacy of the voice. There's a certain reality to that person, a vocal reality, especially if the poem is literally spoken from the grave. So far, the poets we've read are all deceased. So there's that that kind of intimacy and liveliness that is brought back into the poem. But one of the things that's lost is that you can't see the poem anymore. And poems do have a shape, a definite contour and body that on the page. A poem, I would say, kind of floats in a pool of silence on the page, and all the white space around it sort of indicates that silence. But stanza breaks and line breaks are not audible, so we can't appreciate that whole physicality of the poem. And that's a very important aspect, because poets are really, in addition to being singers, you might say, they're also cabinet makers or architects. They're building stanzas and lines and giving the poem this certain sculptural shape. So we do miss that.
Well, let's move on to another poem from this box set that we've asked you to choose from. And next we have Robert Hayden reading his poem, Those Winter Sundays. Tell us who Robert Hayden was.
Well, Robert Hayden was a African-American poet. He was a consultant to the Library of Congress, or poet laureate, as we call it these days. He was not terribly popular with the African-American community, you might say, in that he didn't tend to write about subjects that were racial. You really can't tell from many of his poems what his race is. He was a practitioner of the Baha'i religion, and that the kind of serenity, not that I know much about it, but the kind of contemplative serenity that religion seems to give off was very much at odds with the more kind of vocal people who were speaking out on racial issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, this poem has that beautiful line about what did I know of love's austere and lonely offices. Would you talk about this poem a little bit?
Well, that's the it's an example. Maybe the most important word in the poem is two. He starts out by saying, "Sundays too, my father got up early," which indicates that his father got up early every morning, but also Sundays when they had to go to church, and that's why the shoes are polished so they can go to church. Offices is the poem that the last word, and that's the word that kind of echoes in our heads. And that's an amazing choice of words, because he's talking about parental love or the duties of a parent to take care and feed and clothe and keep a child warm and fed, and how children are by nature not grateful until later. That it's the rare child that sits down and says, "Thank you for this wonderful dinner, Father, and for going to work all day and paying the mortgage." Children just don't say that. And so he realizes this too late. It's also a poem in which is full of wonderful internal sound effects. And the last thing to say, perhaps, is that it is a wonderful example of the compression you find in poetry. A lot gets said in just a few lines.
Well, let's hear it. This is Robert Hayden reading his poem, Those Winter Sundays, recorded in 1968.
Here is a poem that comes directly out of my boyhood in Detroit. It's called Those Winter Sundays. Sundays, too, my father got up early and put his clothes on in the blue-black cold. Then, with cracked hands that ached from labor in the weekday weather, made bank fires blaze. No one ever thanked him. I'd wake and hear the coal splintering, breaking. When the rooms were warm, he'd call, and slowly I would rise and dress, fearing the chronic angers of that house, speaking indifferently to him who had driven out the coal, and polish my good shoes as well. What did I know? What did I know of love's austere and lonely offices.
I think that's such a beautiful poem. I really love that.
It's so powerful. And that phrase, the chronic angers of the house, really has a chilling echo.
So that was Robert Hayden reading those Winter Sundays recorded in 1968. And my guest is the poet Billy Collins. We've asked him to choose some poems to play and talk about from this new box set, Poetry on Record. And Billy, hearing that poem, I'm actually reminded of a poem that you have in your new book, your latest book, The Trouble with Poetry. There's a poem in there about your mother and about how you, I guess it was in summer camp or something, you make your mother this lanyard. And, you know, after all the things she's done for you, after all the sacrifices she's made for you, you're giving her this lanyard that you made, you know, and
I hadn't thought of that connection. But
yeah,
it's,
you give it to her and you think, oh, well, we're kind of even now.
Yeah, she gives me, you know, clothing and food and love and a good education, and here's your lanyard that I made, and that pretty much makes us even, right?
Well, let's move on to another poem that you've chosen from this new box set. This is a poem by Muriel Rukeyser called The Ballad of Orange and Grape. What do you like about this poem?
This has a, well, one reason I chose it is that I wanted to, since we're talking about recorded poetry, Rukeyser has an accent, as many poets do, as, you know, many people do. She has a New York accent. And one wonders if when one is reading poetry silently, does poetry have an accent? It probably doesn't. It probably has either your accent as you read it silently and you hear the poem kind of in the auditorium of your head, or the poem takes place beyond regional accents and it just sounds like the voice from nowhere. It's a little like when, you know, preachers read sections of the Bible and it makes it sound like God's from Alabama. You know, you don't think of the Bible as having an accent. The other, I think an accent kind of adds color and the reality of place, but it might kind of distract slightly. I like this poem because it starts with something very simple. It also has a kind of repetitious refrain that you'll see, and then it broadens out gradually into, you know, the largest concepts imaginable, and I like the way the poem grows outward.
So this is Muriel Rukeyser, recorded in 1974, reading her poem, The Ballad of Orange and Grape.
Ballad of Orange and Grape. After you finish your work, after you do your day, after you've read your reading, after you've written your say, you go down the street to the hot dog stand, one block down and across the way, on a blistering afternoon in East Harlem in the 20th century. Most of the windows are boarded up. The rats run out of a sack. Sticking out of the crummy garage, one shiny long Cadillac. At the glass door of the drug addiction center, a man who would like to break your back. But here's a brown woman with a little girl dressed in rose and pink, too. Frankfurters sizzle on the steel where the hot dog man leans. Nothing else on the counter but the usual two machines, the grape one empty and the orange one empty. I face him in between. A black boy comes along, looks at the hot dogs, goes on walking. I watch the man as he stands and pours in the familiar shape, bright purple in the one marked orange, orange in the one marked grape, the grape drink in the machine marked orange, an orange drink in the grape. Just the one word, large and clear, unmistakable, on each machine. I ask him, how can we go on reading and make sense out of what we read? How can they write and believe what they're writing, the young ones across the street, while you go on pouring grape into orange and orange into the one marked grape? How are we going to believe what we read and we write and we hear and we say and we do? He looks at the two machines and he smiles and he shrugs and smiles and pours again. It could be violence and nonviolence. It could be white and black, women and men. It could be war and peace or any binary system, love and hate, enemy, friend, yes and no, be and not be, what we do and what we don't do. on a corner in East Harlem. Garbage, reading, a deep smile, rape, forgetfulness, a hot street of murder, misery, withered hope. A man keeps pouring grape into orange, and orange into the one marked grape, pouring orange into grape and grape into orange forever.
Billy Collins, how did you first hear that poem by Muriel Rukeyser, or read it?
I first heard it when I was poet laureate, and I was going through recordings of poems that had been read at the Library of Congress and trying to choose some for their website. And but I'd read the poem before, and I was not disappointed by her reading. It is true that some poets are not as equally gifted in the ability to convey their poems audibly or to vocalize them. It's like singer-songwriter. Just because you can write a good song doesn't mean you can sing it. I think all the poems we're listening to today are conveyed well. That poem for me is just, it's a real poet's poem, because it seems to imply that if you don't respect language, if you don't respect this basic, like, here's orange and here's grape, that then everything else can go wrong, you know, social problems perhaps arise from just not paying attention to language. And I love the way the poem goes, a little like Yeats going from an advertisement for sparkling water to this lake aisle. She goes from this little hot dog stand into the distinctions between you and me, war and peace, being and not being. And it's typical of the poetic movement of something tiny into something grand in a fairly small space. I think another thing, just, Terry, to be added to our listening to poems, is that another thing that you lose when you hear a poem, instead of seeing it on the page, in addition to its shape, is that you can't see the ending coming up. When you read a poem on the page, you can see the ending ahead, and you can make emotional preparations for it. In listening to a poem, the ending can take you by surprise. It can come on very suddenly, which, you know, could add to the poem, but also could almost be too abrupt.
That's a really good point.
Some people don't like to go to poetry readings because they can't see the ending coming, and they think that each poem is going to take, you know, an hour and a half to read. So at least having the book in your hand, at least you know that you are into a finite experience.
What does that say?
Well, it speaks to a lack of tolerance, I guess, some poetry readings can be excruciating.
Billy Collins is the former U.S. Poet Laureate and current New York State Poet Laureate. The poems we listen to are collected on the new CD box set, Poetry on Record. In part two of our conversation, which will feature sometime soon, we'll hear more poems from the box, and Billy Collins will read a couple of poems from his latest book, The Trouble with Poetry. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Ian Chillog, Patty Leswing, Sam Brigger, and Jonathan Menjivar. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with a poem by Lord Byron, set to music and sung by Leonard Cohen, featured on his CD, Dear Heather. I just recorded an interview with Leonard Cohen. We'll hear it on Monday.
Outwears the breast, and the heart. to breathe.